Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Max, founder of Wormly, an AI-driven sales platform designed to help businesses identify and engage their most promising leads. Took that from AI, so.
What's up, Anna? Nice to meet you. Great to be here.
Cool. It's great to see you here. And, you know, thank you for joining us in San Francisco. What was it? A couple months ago already. Oh, my God. Time flies. But, yeah, obviously here to talk about Wormly. You're super open on LinkedIn about it. And I feel like, you know, if somebody has been following you, they already know the story. Let's go over it again. But let's start with your background. How did you get to do what you're doing?
Yeah, so I grew up in Denver, Colorado, was more of a mountain kid, and then went off to the East Coast of the United States for college, and found myself very far from Silicon Valley, but getting into coding. And then I really, really fell in love with coding and hackathons and building apps. So I migrated my way to Silicon Valley, where I worked for Google for a couple of years as a product manager on Google Maps. Met my co-founders there, and I think it was part running away from Google because it was really sleepy and boring, and part wanting the drive and excitement of building a business. But we started a company 5.5 years ago, almost six actually. And we basically built the world's worst product. And then we pivoted from there and built the world's second worst product. And then we pivoted from there and built the world's third worst product. And then over 3 years, we pivoted eight times before finally landing on our current business about 2.5, 3 years ago. And we finally figured it out. It's been up and to the right since there. And we've now grown to 400-ish paying customers, about 5 million in annual, almost 5 million in annual recurring revenue. And yeah, growing. So it's been a fun journey, a kind of a crazy ride. But I think I've definitely found my inner peace in like what I am excited to do, which is like build businesses and be an entrepreneur. And so I think it's really nice to have found that sense of direction in terms of like my career.
Awesome. Well, first of all, yeah, you said it was sad and boring. And my question that popped into my mind was like, Google Maps hasn't changed in like the ever. What were you doing there? But yeah, the second one is, what was the world's worst product?
The world's worst product was Tinder for co-founders. So okay. I wanted to start a company. I didn't have any co-founders. So I was like, oh, you know, it'd be a great idea is building an app where you could swipe on people for business connections. And we were competing with Bumble Biz. We were competing with some online websites where you could post to say you want to start a business with somebody. And there's so many problems with this business. I mean, in so many ways, nobody wanted to pay for it. Nobody wanted to sign up. No one liked their matches. It failed at literally every level. But it got me started on my journey. And it taught me that just because you have an idea doesn't mean it's a good one or a good business.
Exactly. But I do remember there was like an influx of those. And I was like, wait, who's paying for it? I was so confused, but now you told me. Okay.
It's a problem, right? Like people struggle to find co-founders, sure. But it's not a business that you can create around it.
Right. Yeah. People are not ready to pay for a co-founder before they see anything, I guess.
It's more of the like classic dating problem where like everybody wants to be better than everybody else. So wants someone who's better than them. And so in like a dating sense, typically people have different things they look for in attractiveness. And so you can actually, both two people can be attracted to each other and then it works out from a dating app. But from a business app, there's pretty classic kind of rules of like what better means. And so people are always looking for, well, you know, I want somebody who's a third time founder and, you know, went to Harvard. And someone's looking for, okay, I want like someone who's been an AI engineer for 10 years. And so like nobody would match with each other because you'd look at a profile and be like, man, you know, I don't know if that's somebody that I really want to like start a company with. So it just didn't quite work.
Okay. Also another revelation that there is Bumble Biz. So.
Yeah. There's Bumble Biz and Bumble BFF. Bumble BFF is to find friends, and Bumble Biz is to find big business relationships.
Now I want to see how it looks like. Maybe after the episode. But okay, so where did you land? Like, what's Wormly and what's kind of the fundamental idea?
Okay, so after like 8 or 9 pivots, we've always been in the sales and marketing technology space. But our fundamental insight was like, it was really hard to find sales when we were doing all of our different pivots, probably because we sucked at sales, but we thought we could build software to help find sales for us. And Wormly, it's called Wormly because we get you warm leads, warm leads. And then the kind of big revelation was kind of an iteration of prior pivots where we got really good at scraping the web and finding good data. And so when we were able to do that, we realized that we could provide warm leads for any company. And so the start of our current product was we would find you a list of warm leads, and then we'd help you reach out to those leads. And so one example of how we do that is we de-anonymize your website traffic. So everybody who comes to your website, but you don't know who they are because they don't actually create an account or fill out a website form, we will tell you either the company that they come from or their actual name and email, and we'll give you that in a prioritized list that is filtered for the types of accounts that you want to go after. Because a lot of people visit your website, a lot of AI bots visit your website that aren't a good fit. So we find the good ones. And then we use that into like a lead scoring model for you that you can basically use to find the best lead list. And then after that, we say, well, why don't we just help you reach out to those leads on your behalf? So we automate outreach to those leads by email, LinkedIn, and then we have an AI chatbot on your website that can engage them too.
Is it possible to do in Europe with GDPR?
Great question. So the answer is yes. We, for privacy reasons, can't reveal the name and email of the actual person who came by your website, but we can reveal the company name that the person who comes by your website works for. And then on top of that, if you tell us who you sell to, like let's say you sell to finance officers, we will then look in a different database and say, who are all the financial analysts and VPs and financial officers at the company that visited your site? And then we'll give you a list of those. So we'll say it was most likely one of these people. I can't promise you that because we can't disclose their actual name and email, but it's probably one of these ones. So you might as well reach out to all of them and see if they'll bite.
Okay, interesting. All right, so I do have a question right away, you know, because I think that's kind of what we're all thinking lately, and you're AI powered. So do you think that AI will eventually replace sales reps completely? And is it possible at this moment?
Yeah, so from a lead generation perspective, yes. And from a close perspective on a B2C world, yes. But for B2B sales to close, as long as humans are buying software, humans need to be selling software. And I'll explain a little bit more about what I mean. But today, no, I don't think that all of top of funnel can be replaced by humans. So you know, just let's break sales into two parts. Find someone to take a meeting with you, and then close that person to, you know, a deal by chatting with them and explaining what's going on. In the first part, you have marketing and you have sales efforts to drive someone to book a meeting with you. And within there, you have different channels. And so a big channel that a lot of humans are a part of is the sales development representative channel, or SDRs. And those are individual people who are calling, emailing, and sending LinkedIn messages to try to get you to take a meeting with them. There are all these interesting AI SDR tools that are coming out, and they're getting better, but the models still aren't quite there yet, and the data isn't quite there yet, and kind of the intelligence around, if I reach out to this person, are they going to reply, or does this email work, does this LinkedIn work, does this phone number work, stuff like that. For legal reasons, around just sort of like spamming, you actually can't call somebody cold with AI and try to get them to book a meeting with you. And even if you did, most people would hang up and they'd be like, that's creepy. I don't want to talk to some bot. So you need humans to like do the actual cold calling or warm calling, as Wormly has it, because we have an interesting method for reaching out to like the like best people to call. But yeah, I think humans are going to be best on LinkedIn, which is tied to a human profile, and best on calling, which like legally has to be for humans to call. But when it comes to email, I think we're going to see the entire, basically the entire, I think all of email will move to AI bots within the next 6 months. I don't think humans should be sending emails anymore. And I think the AI is there and good enough. I think the AI can draft emails, send emails, reply to emails, and book meetings fully over email without any issue. So we're seeing a lot of people create fake email addresses of like fake people. So it's like, you know, Sally@Wormly.ai, Johnny@Wormly.ai. These people don't exist, but you can just run the email thing fully autonomously. Email as a channel is going down in terms of reply rates. So the only way to combat that is to increase volume, which sucks, or be really, really hyper-personalized, which kind of works, but AI can do that as well.
So what about the moment? Because there is a bunch of tools now that, well, I use as well, that generate a reply to the email. So at what point do we hit that, okay, bot is sending the email and bot is replying? Like, where are we getting?
I've yet to see a bot reply to an email, but I love this one tool called Gated. Gated is a kind of like an email blocker. So when someone emails you, when you email someone and they don't have your email or they haven't emailed with you before, you get a reply that says, I'm going to gate you from getting to me unless you donate to my favorite charity. Or press here to promise me that we really know each other and explain how you know me. And so you can either pay like $2 or $3 to their favorite charity to like land in their inbox, or you can do, or you can just say, yeah, I actually know them, you know, let me through. And so I thought that was like a fun kind of like a human blocker for the spam email reach outs.
There is Fixer, and that's the one I use. And I believe I should still hit the send button, but you know, it still drafts email for me.
Yeah. How has that been going, by the way? Is it a good tool?
It is good. I'm pretty happy with it. Like sometimes it offers like a couple of options on how to reply. And I'm always like afraid to be clumsy and just send both of them. That would be funny. But yeah, pretty good tool. I would, I think I would recommend using it. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'll check it out. But yeah, I think that we will enter an age where AIs are talking to AIs. The funny thing is that it'll lead to a bunch of accidentally booked meetings that nobody wants, but we'll see how it goes. So yeah, I think email is done. Don't need humans there. From a sales perspective, obviously you need to like communicate business stuff over email, but I think that from generating sales leads, email should be entirely done by AI, whereas LinkedIn and calling can still be done by humans. I think eventually LinkedIn, people will hook into LinkedIn and like fake messages as well. So that might be eventually done by AI. And then calling should remain a human, just for regulation reasons, remain a human task. What's fascinating is inbound, where like basically AI calling now in the last couple of months has gotten to the place where it's cheap enough that you can fake any voice with any accent. And it is like 100 milliseconds off of real time. So I've had conversations with AI bots audibly that you basically can't tell the difference. And so from a customer support perspective, where you, the human, are calling in to talk to someone, you're consenting to have them be a bot because you're calling in. Whereas in the reverse, when I call you and you haven't consented to talk to me, I can't be an AI bot because that's a spam call. So I think customer support audio is going to, you know, take off from a AI perspective, and that'll unfortunately totally destroy the customer support industry from a human job perspective. Whereas like sales, there are still some good pockets that I think humans can be relevant and valuable.
Exactly. I think we have a brand called Zenloop, a task group, and they've been tinkering with this bot calling in customer support space for a while. And I also had a conversation with a bot and I was like, wait, no, this cannot be happening. Like, this is not a bot, because like you said, they had an accent. There was this, you know, how I sometimes think about my next word. It did the same. And it was like, mm-hmm. That's freaky. Yep. That's very natural. So, I don't know. But okay, that said, you mentioned that you do have some kind of an interesting way to warm up your calls before you do that. What's that?
So we call it warm calling. And the idea is that a typical cold call pickup rate is about 1 or 2% conversion to a meeting. But Warmly has a website script that is on your website, and it can de-anonymize all your website traffic. We can also observe and watch people's mouse movements around your website. So whatever pages they click, wherever they scroll, and you can learn from that to improve your website. But we've also added the ability to do what's called warm calling, which is where you can call somebody while they're on your website. And what's interesting about calling somebody while they're on their website, and when I say call, what I mean is you're actually popping up a chatbot proactively, and you're turning on your video camera and you're waving at them. So it's like you're saying, I can see you through the site. Now, people can find that a little bit disturbing, but a lot of people are like, oh yeah, like I love to talk to somebody. So what's cool about the like doing it through your site is that you'll find that when someone's navigating your website, they're not busy, right? Like they're not, you know, running their kids to soccer practice. They're not sitting down for dinner. They're scrolling your website. And so you might as well use that opportunity to call them. So warm calling is calling someone through your site, and it has a 5 times higher pickup rate than cold calling. What's nice about cold calling is just anytime you're free, you can just call thousands of numbers. And with warm calling, you have to wait until someone shows up on your website. But if your marketing team's doing their job and like running ads and getting, you know, newsletters and getting people to show up on your website, then of course you'll see people show up, and then you can warm call them to get a book meeting.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I could totally see how that can be creepy a little bit, but if I'm not busy and I need to call, I feel like it could be a bit of a better fit for B2C, but correct me if I'm wrong.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
So, yes and no. So the benefit of B2C is that people are going to pick up more often, but the cost to staff a human to like call people all day long and chat with them is high. And so if it's a luxury good B2C company, like you're selling $500 handbags, then those are very high ROI and it works. But the reason why most of our B2B, we almost only sell to B2B. The reason why a lot of B2B customers use it is because the value of the software they're selling is high. And so thus it's worth it to staff a full-time person to jump on and chat with them.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. So you were already talking about the way, you know, how you don't really see the entire sales motion being outsourced to AI. And I wanted to talk to you about the tool that I feel like on LinkedIn, you said that it was one of your most used tools. It's called Orchestrator, and it's a multi-channel outreach. So I wanted to ask you about that, how it works exactly and how independent it is, or, you know, how much of it is still kind of moderated by the sales reps.
Yeah. So one of our key features is that once we find you the leads, then we filter those leads and staggering them to be the best leads, then you want to reach out to those leads. And you can reach out to them via our chatbot when they're on the website, or you can automate reach out to them via email or LinkedIn. So our orchestrator helps you orchestrate these leads wherever you want to send them. You can send them to your CRM. You can send them by webhooks to anywhere. You can send them into Clay, into Zapier, whatever. But we also hook into all the email and LinkedIn, Outreach, SalesLoft, LinkedIn directly, Apollo, HubSpot, all those kind of email sequencers. And so because your sales team is already using these tools, we hook into your sales rep's email address, and you choose the sequence that you want to run, and you can push out leads into those sequences. So it's kind of like a workflow builder where you say, when someone visits my website and their account, the company they work for is in my sales rep Catherine's territory, pull Catherine's email address and send an email sequence pretending to be Catherine from Catherine's account via Outreach, and then you run that sequence. And that sequence could have call steps, it could have LinkedIn steps, it could be whatever the sales leader or marketing leader wants, but it automates the send through, which is, I think, very valuable and isn't fully done by AI. Like, we actually intentionally see higher reply rates by email and LinkedIn when you, the demand gen leader or the sales leader, have the time to set up a sequence and like choose your messaging. We are probably going to be adding AI messaging in eventually, but the reply rates are kind of the same. So you might as well have control over the message.
And speaking about control, you know, obviously we're all using AI for some kind of content generation, cold brainstorming, whatever. But pretty much all the time you can say that, okay, this is AI. Like, it takes, I don't know, a second for me to open an email and realize that this is AI. Oh, I had such a disappointed moment when a friend reached out to me, and he was like, also a host of a podcast, and he was like, can you give me an intro to this guest that you had a couple of years ago? I'm like, sure, absolutely. And he sent me a description of the podcast and kind of like the email that I could send to him. And I was like, man, did you just like AI bombed me? Like, that's horrible. Don't do that. Let me draft an email, but it's going to be, you know, personalized, and, you know, yeah, it's going to feel so much better. I mean, aren't you sick of this generic stuff? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Oh, sorry. Just a personal rant. But
I feel you. I think we're going to start to see even your friends are going to be using like AI texting tools, and then, you know, you're going to run it all through there. And it's like, on the one hand, it's like it feels lazy. On the other hand, it's sort of impersonal. And we as humans are lazy creatures. And that's the thing, is like, I find myself whenever I have something that's a little bit more complicated, for the first time last week, I asked AI to generate me a plan for how I was going to go about tackling a problem. And I was like, this is kind of saving me some time. I like it.
Yes. Okay. I mean, there are advantages, obviously. But I do feel like when it's a personal relationship, in, I don't know, B2B, it makes sense to maybe take a minute or two to draft an email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'll get used to it, you know, I promise. And yeah, a couple of weeks.
It's a great equalizer, right? It democratizes the ability for anybody to get involved quickly in the SaaS space. I think it's going to kill margins across the board for everyone. And we're all going to get the chance to be our own entrepreneur or business person. But it's going to fill the world with 99% sort of templated stuff, and the models are just trained on the stuff that came before. And so it's going to get harder and harder to stand out. And probably the like humanness will be a big differentiator. And like, I'm seeing a lot of like in-person events and conferences come back and be really important, because, you know, you're talking face to face to another human.
Absolutely. So coming back to that rant, how do you ensure that, you know, the brand voice is preserved, that go and pretend to be Catherine actually works and it sounds like Catherine throughout the entire cycle of that communication?
So the sequences that go out through Catherine's email inbox are sequences that our sales team have written and used forever. So she's not sending personalized emails. She's sending templated ones from this automation of these like light touch leads. Catherine's day-to-day, she is sniping and picking particular leads that she should personalize and customize notes to. So I do think that there is a, like, there's the sort of human element of like, if you really personalize, it will feel really personalized, and thus you get way, 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 way higher reply rate. But automated sequences or AI-generated sequences, that's just kind of like the light touch, the nurture, the like, I opened it but don't reply kind of situation. And actually, the best way to preserve the brand voice in some sense isn't to trust the rep to talk your brand, right? Because you have to coach them on like, this is the Wormly way of talking, but it's to let your sales leader or your marketing leader write the copy that they believe best articulates the brand voice, and then make sure the reps use those sequences.
It's interesting. I had the exact same conversation with somebody who is in customer support and believes in human touch and does automate certain parts of customer service in their business, but still has a button of like, okay, let's go to a person, let's talk to somebody real, has a whole philosophy behind it. And they were like, yeah, absolutely, absolutely no, we don't have templates. We need to, there are templates to a certain level, but when it's a conversation, it needs to be a person, has to be personal. Then I talked to a CTO of one of the companies that we acquired, and he was like, Anna, I would rather trust AI than any new sales rep, any new customer service person, because AI knows its stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. So different.
It's crazy. So we launched two AI agents the last 2 weeks. One's an AI agent for engineering that essentially pre-writes 99% of your code for you, and then a human engineer checks it over. And then we launched an AI agent for internal sales enablement. So all of our sales team can ask questions about what's the right answer to certain questions. Both of them are trained on the entire corpus of our data. So every call recording for the last 2 years, every Slack message for the last 2 years, every email for the last 2 years, and all of our internal help center videos, Google Drive, whatever, just all that knowledge and context. And then you can ask it a question like, is Wormly compliant in GDPR? And it'll pull from past conversations and rank them on frequency and relevance and all that kind of stuff. And it's like 95% good at replying. And so if a human can't quickly answer one of my sales team members with their question, this thing should just knock it out for them.
Were there any glitches with actual customers?
We haven't deployed either of these things customer facing. So that I think is important, is that it's all internal. And so I can stomach the glitches. Yeah, eventually we'll launch that from a customer support perspective.
Okay, so for now, there is no AI in customer support.
For Wormly, correct. We use only humans for our support replies.
Okay, all right. So not for customer support, only for the sales. So, that said, again, AI is evolving. I feel like there is so much FOMO. I had this, one of my colleagues shared today, this table with all kinds of AI tools available for, for marketing, for coding, for yada, yada, yada. And I looked at them and I maybe knew like 15%. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
I should know all them, right? And I feel like, as a founder, maybe you have that too, because like you want to try what everyone's doing. You want to be on top of how the models evolve. How do you keep sane? How do you make sure that, okay, there is still focus and this is what Wormly is and this is the fundamental value that we provide and we don't want to just do any thing?
I think it's really hard. I think it's really easy to lose focus in the age of AI. I think it's sort of like everything's shiny, everything feels quick to build, and people from a messaging perspective will lose the ability to be stuck in one person's mind is one thing. So it's sort of like there's a core marketing principle of when I have a problem, I need to think of someone to solve that solution. And sure, maybe I'll search on Google, like who solves this thing, but you want to be the first name that pops into somebody's mind when they have a problem that you solve, and you only have the ability to get across one problem that you solve. And so one of the problems with these generic sales and marketing or engineering or coding, whatever agents, is it's like you don't say like, I have a problem with marketing. You say, you know, my SEO isn't good and I want a tool that helps me like pump out blog posts. And so you're going to need to ideally hear about just one tool that's number one best at that one thing. And that's something that we've fallen victim to at Wormly. So we've actually launched too many features, too many things. And we're now in the process of actually simplifying and focusing on there's just one thing that we do really well, and it's build a great lead list. And like that's the only thing we do really well. We have a bunch of other tools, but we're going to focus on that as our core one thing that when you have a problem, you come in here.
Awesome. So do you have one tool that's best for, I don't know, maybe your personal life for that problem solving task that you just mentioned? Or yeah, just in general, maybe you have a list of some AI tools that you cannot live without.
Well, I don't know about cannot live without yet, but I would say this AI engineering tool called CodeGen is pretty mind-blowing in the fact that it can speed up my engineers 10x. It's a Slack bot, and you can say, hey, CodeGen, please add this feature, and it just goes and codes it like 90%. And that was really revolutionary because what it means is that all of our team can be an engineer and add to the product. So CodeGen for the engineering side, I think is really, really powerful. I'm also trying right now something called Limitless. And so for those listening in, I'm pulling out a pendant that's hanging around my neck. For those watching, you can see it. It's a sort of always listening, you know, kind of recording device. It doesn't record the audio. It transcribes the audio and gives me a kind of written list of everything that happens to me throughout my day. And then I can use AI to ask it questions like, what are all my action items for the day? What were the, you know, write me a LinkedIn post based on what Anna and I talked about in our podcast earlier. And it just sort of all goes onto an app on my phone. And it's called Limitless.
So that's like a note taker for your life.
Yeah. Yeah. 24/7. Just keep it charged and that's it.
Okay. Why did you feel like you needed it? I'm super curious now.
So the founder of the company originally created it for people with Alzheimer's or people who have like memory loss or hearing issues. And I thought that was a really cool use case. And then it's been broadly expanded to anybody in the kind of like productivity use case. So like in case you forget something. And I always have this problem of like, you know, oh, what's that thing? Or like, I think I put this on Slack, but I can't quite remember. And it's like, you know, you just ask this as a question first. That's one piece. And then two, I think is like remembering and getting to know people. So imagine if like you and I were to meet again in a couple of months, you know, for another call, I could be like, hey, Limitless, like, remind me who Anna is, what she does, what I should know about her, and what we talked about last time. So I can like bring that back up to you.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. Okay, cool. I can see quite a few use cases for this one.
Yeah. Then. I mean, so you saw, right, that OpenAI acquired Jony Ive, the like original creator of the Macintosh computer, for like $6 billion to join OpenAI. And they're going to be building a hardware device. And I'm almost certain that the hardware device they're building is a always listening recorder for your life, as well as sort of a, like maybe like, you know, glasses or whatever to be able to like real world query stuff.
Okay. I have to look it up because that's, I don't know. I want to say I use AI, but now I'm like, no, I don't.
Because well, you literally have it on. Yeah, they've only come out in the last couple of months. I got this thing last week, so it's very new for me as well. But I really like it so far. Like yesterday, I asked it to generate me a to-do list based on my day, and that was like very useful.
Cool. All right, I'll reach out to you in a couple of months, see how how you're doing with it. But also, okay, I have a few more questions because, you know, like I said earlier, you're pretty active on LinkedIn, and I've been following what you put out there for a while. And I just wanted to ask you, like, how the idea came up to you to just do it all very transparently, and if, you know, if there are advantages and disadvantages to it.
Yep. So yeah, for those who haven't followed me before, I post our revenue numbers every month on LinkedIn. And I also have a series called Going Clear, where I essentially post the behind the scenes of things that work and don't work, go good or bad, as I go through the motions of building my business. Like a hilarious controversial one was I wanted to hire an intern this summer to follow me around. And I posted that it was an unpaid internship. And everybody freaked out and was like, that's cruel. You have to pay people. You know, this is so fucked up. You know, it's illegal in California, whatever. So then I looked into it and it turns out it's not technically illegal, but it is like frowned upon. So the next day I posted a new thing saying, you know, hey, going clear. Yesterday I posted this thing about a free intern. Sounds like you have to pay, you know, people. And it was like a job shadow. Like they were just going to follow me around and like, it's going to be like experience. They weren't even really going to do any work other than like film me. So I changed it to a paid position based on those learnings from what people reacted to. And so it's cool because I get to kind of like learn from my audience and I get to hear what people's feedback is and kind of build in public to the extreme. And then part of posting our numbers is just sharing what's worked and what hasn't worked this past month in the business and how we feel about that. So I think that's great.
Did you hire that intern? Was it like, oh no, he's now we think he's horrible when no one is going to work for him?
So we did hire an intern. We are paying him. And yeah, it's like, I didn't need an intern. I was sort of just trying to be nice and give the kid a chance to like follow me around and learn from what it's like to start a company. But yeah, I think I appreciate the internet helping me learn more about what I can and can't do.
Yeah. That's a fun one. But another thing that you posted also, I think fairly recently, correct me if I'm wrong, it's about a PE approaching you for an acquisition and how you turned out the offer and you explained everything. And maybe you can, you know, give a quick rundown right now. But what I'm interested in is that, you know, obviously you have a vision for the company and kind of a place in the life of a business where you would be more comfortable thinking about an exit. But was there anything that PE could have done differently that, you know, it would be a better experience for you? Or maybe it would actually start you on thinking about an exit there and then?
So as the founder of my business and CEO, it is my like fiduciary duty to maximize the return for my shareholders. So I have all these investors, they've given me money. We've raised about $20 million. And my goal is to maximize their return on this business. And so I want to always have a variety of options available to us in terms of making them a lot of money. The model of venture capital is one of make a lot of bets and most of them will fail. And so, and then have a few that have a massive return. And so taking the first exit that we were offered would mean that I think it was like make everyone a little bit of money. But that wasn't why people invested in the first place. They invested to see this thing kind of skyrocket. So that's where I wanted to, well, that's basically why I decided to turn it down. But as time goes on, as we basically approach our Series B, hopefully in maybe like 6 months, we need to be ever aware of all the options available to us. And so should we get acquired? Should we sell half the business, which is a new model emerging right now in private equity is like by half, and then or take venture capital money. My strong preference is to take venture capital money and raise a Series B. Hopefully at a big increase in valuation to be able to keep the party going and keep growing. But it is, again, my responsibility to make sure I can present to my investors all the options. And so if there's an option to, you know, make 3X in the business, I'm almost positive all my investors will say, don't take that. You know, we want to make a huge outcome. So keep going for it. But yeah, as a first-time founder, I've never really met with a PE firm before. I don't really understand all the different financing options. Every new stage that I get to is a first time learning that I'm figuring out as I go. And so it's been fun and a great journey so far to learn those things. But as of right now, I'm no interest in selling the business.
Okay. What's the rough valuation for Wormly right now?
That I'm not able to share.
Okay.
But we're at like almost 5 million in revenue.
Okay, cool. Great. So, you know, to generate that incredible return on investment, do you know what's next for Wormly? Like, how are you doing this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big shift to a lot of AI agent stuff. We have a lot of cool products in the works. And then it's really just about building out the niche features that our customers are going to need to drive as much revenue as they can. kind of simple as that. It's like we have a lot of great features. Our customers want to see value created through pipeline generated in sales and marketing efforts. And that's what we live for.
Okay. All right. Easy enough. All right. So I'll just ask you a couple more questions that are, you know, the usuals here. And the first one is about your biggest win and your biggest failure, and can be for you personally as a founder or for Warmly.
Biggest win was closing $500,000 deal with a Fortune 10 company. I just, as a salesperson at heart, I love closing deals, and to close a big deal like that feels really awesome. Hopefully that deal doubles in size at the renewal, but we'll see. Biggest failure, I think the first few people I fired, I did a really bad job at firing them. I think that I let them down because I sort of took away their agency and just was like, you're fired, get out. And I was following the like HR, like legal stuff. Like my legal team told me to do this. My HR team told me to do this. And I was like very prescriptive. And I think that there's like a more human approach that you can take to letting people go that involves more of a conversation, as well as giving them agency in how they depart the company, letting them sort of choose what they want to do. I just think that's sort of like a kinder thing to do and leads to like less headaches. So I've evolved my style of firing over the years.
What is your style of firing now?
You take the Donald Trump gavel and you just go, you're fired. No, we don't have to get into the full thing now, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who's listening about this later on if they need tips on how to fire, but generally, it's the giving a series of options to a person that says, here's the problem. The problem is your performance. Do you agree? And they say, yeah, like I recognize that there's issues here and I see them. And it's like, cool. Like we can do a couple different things that I can think of, but I'm open to ideas that you have too. And we're not going to make any decisions here today. So like lowers the temperature of the conversation. And it's like, okay, we can put you on a performance improvement plan to like turn your performance around. But heads up, it's going to be very hard and difficult because I need to see that you can prove to us that when you're under the gun, you can like actually perform. Two, you can leave today. We'll give you generous severance, no harm, no foul. Three, you can leave in a few weeks after wrapping things up and solving some projects. No harm, no foul. We'll still refer you and help you get another job. Or four, your choice. You know, you tell me what you think is fair or what you think the right thing to do is given that your performance is lacking. And then you say, think about it. Take a day, take a two, relax, just like figure it out. And then come back to me with other options. And they present a few other options. And I say, great, we have five options on the table in front of us. You tell me what you want to do. And sometimes they say, I don't think it's going to work out here. I'm fine to leave. That's sort of their choice. Or they can say, I really want to make this work. I'm going to try really hard. Put me on the performance improvement plan. And I acknowledge that if I don't achieve that bar, then I got to go. Or some other combination. But it's like a conversational discussion as opposed to like a hard, I don't think you're working out. You're fired.
Okay, so it's not hire fast, fire fast kind of situation anymore.
It's give performance feedback fast, but you know, you can, yeah, live up to a month. I mean, if you're going to give severance anyway, then like giving them a few weeks to try to turn things around seems pretty reasonable.
Absolutely. All right, so the last question is about a hack, and it can be anything. It can be your personal, it can be something that works for the company, something that other founders would appreciate.
I find that a great company-wide productivity hack for me is to have a spreadsheet called number one priority, and you make every person in your company every week or 2 weeks write down what their number one priority is, and then fill out yes or no if they accomplished the previous one. It's a really quick read and fast way to make sure you know what everybody's working on and make sure everyone's aligned toward working on something that moves the needle for the company.
Interesting. We do have the same at Sauce Group, but we share three priorities for,
nice,
I think, 2 weeks. Yeah. I think I agree with you. It's a great overview. And, you know, even if they kind of just go on the same for a few cycles, I think that's still kind of a good overview of what's going on and how maybe difficult the task is sometimes. But yeah, awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, everything else I'll probably just read on LinkedIn because, like I said, you're super transparent there apart from the valuation part. But Maybe we'll hear about it once you raise your next round.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thanks so much for being here. It's been fun.
Thanks, Anna. Bye.
Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.